This is Geneva Nickel. I'm speaking with Dr. Robert L. Bunger. We're in the Systems Department conference room. I'd like to acknowledge Norm Collins, who's engineering the audio in this production. We're going to be putting in place a history, an oral history of Hurricane Floyd, which occurred in the state of North Carolina, and particularly in Pitt County in mid-September of 1999. Dr. Bunger, welcome, and thank you for allowing me to converse with you on the history of your experience with this storm. We were giving warning a few days before Hurricane Floyd actually arrived. Tell me about the beginning. Where were you when we began hearing about the possibilities?
We were at home. I think it was Wednesday the 15th. The night of Wednesday the 15th was when the hurricane really hit. I'd been through hurricanes before. I remember Hurricane Hazel, I guess it was, or one we had back in the 1950s that gave Virginia Beach such a fit.
I remember that too. I was a little girl.
Yeah, so I was a child at that time too in Portsmouth. So I remember, you know, that standing at the window and my mother telling me to come away from the window because the wind was blowing the slates off the roof across the street, and she was afraid the slates were going to come through the window. So, you know, I've been through hurricanes all my life, and I've known, you know, that there was a time, hurricanes are a time that you're not supposed to go out and walk around unless you want to get conked over the head with a big piece of a sign or a roof or a tree limb or something like that. But I'd never experienced anything like this at all, any of the places we had lived. And I've lived in eastern North Carolina, eastern Virginia most of my life, except for the 3 years in Evanston and the 1 year in Africa. I've lived my whole life in this part of the country and have seen many hurricanes come through, and really didn't have any reason to think this was going to be any different than the others. Although I remember when they showed the pictures of it, the radar and satellite pictures of it on the weather the night before, I mean, it looked like it was a big storm, but you never can tell, because I always suspect that the weathermen, you know, kind of augment things like that to make them look more exciting and bigger than they are anyway. So, yeah, but it definitely looked like a big storm. So, and then of course, Wednesday night we had the storm, and it rained and it blew and it rained and it blew and so on. And then, you know, Thursday, it looked like it was over with. Lee and I had originally planned to go to New Bern on Thursday, like we usually do. She had to work in her other office, but you know, we were told, you know, it was not a good idea to cancel the trip, so we did. And sometime, it must have been on Thursday morning, the police came around and handed out these little red notices, red sheet of paper saying, danger of flood. Well, I was living on Warren Street. I'd lived on Warren Street for 20 years. And, you know, we'd had flooding on Warren Street, but flooding on Warren Street had meant, like, you know, water in the street, water curb to curb. One time, a long time ago, we actually had water come up in the yard, but that was all the flooding I'd ever seen on Warren Street. I'd seen back there beyond Warren Street where the duplexes are, I'd seen, you know, water standing there maybe a foot deep. But, you know, that's all the flooding I'd seen in 20 years. So, you know, we thought, okay, it's going to flood. That means we're going to have water in the streets, maybe have water in the yard. And then, I guess it was late Thursday, late afternoon, the water started coming up in the streets. And, you know, we thought, oh, you know, this, we're going to go a little bit and it'll stop. But it wasn't going to stop. And before we knew it, the Honda, which was the car, it was in the lowest part of the driveway, it was full of water. And water had come up to almost to the edge of the front porch. So there were some local people out from the street, you know, from the neighborhood, and I got them to help me push the Ford up beyond Willow Street, because I couldn't get started if water had gotten into it. But not bad, I mean, water had gotten up to the end of the floorboards that high. But I mean, water was already deep in the Honda. So I got some of the local guys there to help me push the Ford up out of the water and up to Willow Street. And because I didn't know what to do about the Honda, but I figured the Ford was savable anyway, because not that much water had gotten into it. So we pushed it up just beyond Will Street. And then Lee and I just decided we were going to wait it out. And we figured, okay, the water's going to come up to the porch, and that's it. Well, work, I guess it was maybe about 9 o'clock that night, the water came up to and over the porch.
How tall is your porch?
Oh, at least, that porch was at least 3 feet off the ground.
This is a two-story house?
One-story.
One-story house.
But this was like the front stoop there, the little front
right.
porch. And the water came up and over it, and we put, you know, towels around inside the front door. And friends of ours, actually a couple of Lee's co-workers, had called and said, well, if it gets bad, you can come and stay with us. So we said, well, we'll see. And then, oh, I guess it was about maybe 10 o'clock, the water started coming up through the floor vents and into the carpets. And we knew then we had a serious problem.
Were you frightened?
Well, I was.
I mean, what was your first impression? It's almost like something from a science fiction movie. I'm sure everybody must have felt that way.
Yeah.
Like something from a science fiction movie when suddenly all this water starts coming in through the vents, etc. Were you frightened? Did you feel that you could control this inundation?
I had a feeling I needed to do something right away. That something was happening and it was serious and we needed to do something about it. So we very quickly packed a couple bags, and then we called our friends and said, you know, we're coming, come down to the edge of the water and we'll meet you there at the edge of the water. And of course it was very important for me to save the cats, because we didn't know how high the water was coming at that point.
How many cats do you have?
We had four at that time. We have five now. We had four at that time and only two cat carriers, because we never took more than two to the vet at one time. So we put the two cats that kind of agree with each other, the two short hairs, we put them in the big carrier. And then the big fuzzy black and white cat that doesn't agree with anybody except me, we put her in the small carrier. And then we looked for the Siamese, and we couldn't find the Siamese. But as we put each one in the carrier, we had some cat Valium, because the big black and white cat, Annie, she gets real upset when she goes to the vet, so we have a prescription for cat Valium for her. So as each cat went in the carrier, I put a cat Valium in mouth. Bella and Stormy, the two short hairs, when they went in their carrier, we gave them each a Valium. And then when Annie went to her carrier, I gave her a Valium. And then we couldn't find the Siamese cat, because she was so frightened she had run to hide in Lee's closet with Lee's clothes and dresses. And we were getting ready, and we said, we got to go. We can't wait any longer, because by then the water was up to our ankles. And we each had a bag. And also the young man, Jason, one of Lee's co-workers, Jason Williams, he had actually waited into the house, and he was helping us get our bags, two suitcases out. And just at the last minute, Lee saw the Siamese cat in the closet, and by then both the cat carriers had gone. We'd already taken those down to the edge of the water to put them in Jason's car. So best thing we could find was a World Wildlife Fund tote bag. So we put Tara into the tote bag and kind of squinched it around her so she couldn't jump out, so her four paws were, not, she couldn't get those out and, you know, to jump out. And I stuck a Valium down her mouth, and out we went with three cats and two carriers, one cat in the tote bag. And, you know, we went to Charlotte Alexander and Jason Williams' home, and they said, you know, we can stay here and everything's fine. So we spent the night there. And then the next morning, we said, we better go back and see what's happening. So, of course, we left everything that we had taken out, which wasn't that much, like it was like a suitcase apiece, and my briefcase, and, of course,
yeah, how do you decide what to take at a time like that?
Well, we basically were packing like you'd pack for a weekend. You know, we weren't thinking our home is going to be destroyed, we're going to lose everything. We were thinking, like, you know, we're going to have a mess, and we're going to take the things we need, you know, a couple changes of clothes, toiletry, razor, book to read, my Buddhist text I have to read every night, the things like that, you know, the things that you would like need for a weekend. And then we went back the next morning, they rode us down there, and the water was really coming up. And people were trying to get things out of their houses.
So at this time, had the had the hurricane actually come through? Had the storm come through?
Hurricane had come through Wednesday night, actually.
So you were in preparation then for the cresting
of
the Tar River. Is that what was happening?
That's a good question. Where did the flood come from? Because, you know, Thursday it was not raining, but all of a sudden, late Thursday afternoon, the water started rising. And I have suspected that at some point further up the river, they opened a dam or something up around Rocky Mount or Wilson. They opened a dam on the Tar River or something like that, because all this water just basically came out of nowhere, because the river wasn't high until Thursday night, and all of a sudden the river started coming up like crazy Thursday afternoon, Thursday night. So I've suspected that there was some shenanigans further up the line, that they opened some dams or something further up the line. I don't think that's ever kind of come out. I guess somebody could investigate it and find out, but I always thought it was very fair that we got some compensation for the damage from the governments, from the state government, from the U.S. government, because I really believe that was some government authority further up the line opened a dam and let that water out. Because you went from the river being normal to the river, you know, coming up a foot an hour. Now there's something going on there.
Yeah, that's very peculiar, the night after
the
storm.
So anyway, we went back there, and I was real concerned about the car, and I'd called the AAA, and the AAA guy wasn't too helpful. He said he wouldn't get his tow truck wet. I had to make sure the car was out of the water. And by then, the water had come up to Willow Street and was around the wheels of the car. So I got some boys, college boys, to help me push the car a little further up Willow Street, another 10 feet. And then the AAA man came and towed the car, and I got in the car. I was concerned with saving the car. And in the meantime, Lee and Charlotte and Jason had waded back into the water to get into the house and see what they could save. And I was perhaps wisely or unwisely concerned about saving the car, so I went with the AAA man that was a Ford, because we figured the Honda was gone by then. And we tried to take it to the garage where they usually works on my cars. They were closed, so we took it to his garage. And I was, you know, really distraught, and he said, well, let me see if I can get the thing started, because I didn't even know how I was going to get from his garage back to the home again, because his garage is all the way downtown. So he said, well, let me see if I can get the thing started. So he monkeyed around with it, as only a trained mechanic can monkey around with a motor like that, and finally got it started. He said, don't you dare turn it off for 15 minutes. To drive it where you're going and then let it idle for 15 minutes and make sure it doesn't turn off. Because if it does, you're going to have trouble. So I drove the car back to Charlotte's house and left it, and I sat there in the yard for about 15 minutes and let the engine idle. And then I figured, well, you know, I've got to get back there to the house. I've got to see what's going on. So I started walking back down the street, and I was about 2 miles, I guess, or a mile or more, mile or two away from the house. So I saw a friend of mine who lived on the same street as Charlotte, 4th Street. I saw that her door was open. So I went and spoke to Mary and told her what was going on. And she gave me a cold drink and gave me a ride down to the water's edge in her car. So, and by then, that Charlotte and Lee and Jason had been back in the house a number of times, and they were getting things out. And then I started going back in and trying to get things out. And it's real hard under those circumstances. You know, when the water is rising, you know, more than a foot an hour, to figure out what to save. And everything's floating around, and by then the water was, I guess it was almost, it was between our knees and waist already by that time. That was like mid-morning. And so I remember actually diving into the water. At that time, the water was not murky and filthy like it got later. the water was brown, but it was clean. It was brown, like the Tar River water is normally. But it wasn't full of filth and murk like it got later that the next day. So I actually dove in the water in my study to look for my shoes.
Oh my.
And to look for a good pair of shoes and to look for a knife of mine that I was very fond of and didn't want to lose. And I found those. I actually had to stick my head underwater to find them. And then...
Was the water clear enough to see your feet?
Sort of, yeah. Like about as clear as seawater, although of course it was fresh water. And then...
And it was clear outside, wasn't it? It was a clear day, and the skies were blue?
Oh, yeah, blue skies.
But suddenly you had these floodwaters just
suddenly
coming up an hour.
Suddenly these floodwaters were rising.
A foot in an hour.
So we started trying to get things, and I looked around, and all my library was there, and the books I'd been accumulating and trying to save, and so on. Some of them were already underwater. Like the lower range of my desk was already underwater, and I didn't even think about those things, but those were... All of my father's books and some of my grandfather's books, they were all down there, and they were already in the water. I just didn't even think about them. And I told Jason, I said, you know, I've tried so hard to accumulate these books. I've got so much invested in them. He said, well, let's try to save them. And he or Charlotte, one or the other, had gotten a whole bunch of white plastic bags, like trash bags, like you use to put in your trash can. So Jason said, start stuffing the books in the bags. So I started putting books in the bags. And Jason had found a rubber raft, inflated rubber raft, floating in the street outside.
Good luck.
And we took the rubber raft, and he put a card table on the rubber raft and made a big raft. And then he put about five or six bags of these white plastic bags of my books on the raft and then floated it up the street. So that way he saved, I guess maybe, you know, counting large and small books, saved about 100 of my books. And I would say of my active library, the things that I was using, he probably saved maybe 2/3. But we still lost my, what I call my inactive library, things I have not been using recently. We lost all my father's books, we lost my grandfather's books, we still had, we lost my late son's books, we lost all of those. We lost, I guess, 95% or almost 99% of Lee's library. And she had a lot of books. She must have had 800 books. And we lost every one of hers, except for a couple that she had taken with her. Oh, okay, and there was a bookshelf in the living room with some nice books on it, like earlier editions and so on. And Charlotte saw those, and she decided they must be important because they were on a separate shelf. So Charlotte saved those. She saved a whole shelf full of those books, which are of Lee's. I guess Lee maybe lost 95% of her books, but the 5% that were saved were things that were really important, like her a copy of Dorothy Parker's poems and stories and things like that were saved. But 95% of her books were lost. And then Lee and Charlotte had gone into the bedroom, and Lee had cleaned off the stuff on our night tables, because both of us had a bunch of things we were really fond of on our night tables, like my father's pipe and a little pipe stand, and things that Lee had given me when we first got married, and things of that sort. So Lee cleaned off my nightstand and dumped stuff into a bag to save them. And Charlotte went into the closet, went into the dresser drawers, and began pulling clothes out. So she got a couple bags of clothes. And we must have made, I guess Lee, my wife, and Charlotte Alexander and Jason Williams must have made about 7 round trips apiece. I probably made about 5. Of course, I was late getting there on account of messing with the car. So, and by that time, you know, the water was waist deep inside the house. And we had this bench that Lee's stepfather had made for us. And we had brought the bench inside the previous night because we didn't want it to float away. And here we were working the house, and this great big heavy picnic bench kept floating around in the house. We kept pushing this picnic bench out of the way. Get out of the way, get out of the way. And it kept trying to float out the door. Every time we'd open the door, the picnic bench kept trying to float out the door.
Well, that's not funny, but it was an interesting reminder of grandfather, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was Lee's stepfather had made it, actually. So anyway, we still have that bench, by the way. We found it, saved it after the flood. It's on our patio right now. But anyway, we were saving what we could.
And was there any way to build above what was on the floor? Oh, no, because everything was floating.
Everything was floating.
And you didn't have an attic you could go into? And
there was like a little hatch, but there was no floored attic up there. And we did put some stuff. We'd been renovating the house, and I guess the renovations were about 80% complete, but of course they were 100% destroyed. But there was like one cabinet, one kitchen cabinet way up high, and we'd stuck some books up there. And oddly enough, the water somehow did not get into that cabinet, and there were like maybe 10 books that were in that cabinet that survived. It didn't get wet. It was in the highest kitchen cabinet. But somehow the water did not come up quite high enough to get into that kitchen cabinet. But anyway, we kept grabbing things, and you just can't think straight. You know, thinking back, you know, I wish we'd picked up the camera. I wish we'd picked up the CD player. We had just bought a brand new mouse for the computer. It had been very easy to take that. But we just weren't thinking straight. You know, we just were grabbing what we could. And the water kept getting higher, and the police were down there, and they kept saying that they were going to have to stop people from going back into the houses. But there was a policewoman who lived on our street, fortunately, and she was trying to get her stuff out. So they couldn't very well tell the civilians they couldn't get their stuff out while the policewoman was still going to her house. So
were there a lot of emergency workers coming door to door and to do rescues?
No.
No?
No, nobody helped. College students were sitting there in their lawn chairs up above Willow Street and taking in the spectacle. Nobody helped except the people that were living there on Warren Street. Nobody helped us except for people on Warren Street that helped me push the car out, and of course Jason and Charlotte. But the local people, including people we knew, they just came and stood there like fools and gawked and turned around and left.
How strange. Do you suppose that they were just in a state of devastation, some sort of shock or...
I don't know. I'd like to think so. I'd like to think so. I'd like to think if I were in that case and I saw a friend of mine in the jam, you know, I'd wade into the damn water to help him out.
Oh, absolutely. I know I saw on the news in Washington people swimming and diving. They thought they were just frolicking about, having a great old time. And it's like, well, why aren't we helping rescue one another?
Well, when the last trip I made in, what had happened, we were just piling stuff up, and actually we did get some help. I take back what I said, but we did get some help. A former student of mine came down there with his little white truck and asked if he could help. And I said, yeah, I want you to keep an eye on my wife, Lee. I said, she's so distraught, and there's so much going on, I want to make sure she's all right. So I want you to keep an eye on her and make sure she's all right. I said, you don't have to go in the water, but just keep an eye on our stuff and keep an eye on Lee. And his name is Mickey Adams. He's a very nice man, former student.
Yeah, I know Mickey.
And he came down there with his white truck. He did. That was the one person other than Jason and Charlotte who helped us, was Mickey Adams. And I believe his wife was there too also. And I decided I was going to make one more trip in. So I had somehow in my idea, again, it's funny the things you think of, but Lee was taking this course at Pitt Community College, and she'd spent like $150 on school books for that course. So I knew where she had left her book bag, so I went back in the house for that. I was just determined I was going to get Lee's school books. And in retrospect, it would have been better if I'd gotten the camera or the computer or something like that, but I just wanted her school books.
Well, the teacher-student thing, yeah. Of course you would understand.
But
how important her books were. She could study during the flood.
But I went in there and I got her school books and her book bag. And when I came out, and by then the water was over my waist in the house. And when I came out of the house,
this is daylight.
It was daylight. It was a Friday morning, and I came out of the house and stepped off the porch, and the water came all the way up to my armpits, and I was holding her book bag over my head and feeling my way through the water.
Were you terrified?
No, I was determined. Although I did do some praying, though.
good. I think prayers would be in order.
I did do my Buddhist prayers, because I did realize, you know, that I could die in that situation. You know, I could drown.
Yes.
And that was not a good thing. So I did do my Buddhist prayers the whole time. But I got out with Buddha, with Lee's book bag, you know, unharmed.
With water up to your armpits, how far did you have to walk in that condition?
A block, a city block.
Was there debris swiftly moving past you? Was the water moving swiftly, or was it still?
It was coming up steadily, but not swiftly.
So it was more of a rise as opposed to a surge.
More of a rise, a steady rise. We figured about a foot an hour. It may have been even faster than that. So by the time we got up there to Willow Street again, we had this pretty fairly huge pile of stuff we'd accumulated. And the police said, we're not going to let anybody go back because the water could hit the power lines, you know, we could have electrical flash, and people get electrocuted and so on. Of course, by then also the police woman had gotten her stuff out. So okay, we said, we've done what we can do. And so we loaded things in Charlotte's car, we loaded things in Jason's car. I think Jason, in the meantime, had gotten his little car down there. And Mickey Adams with his little white truck, we loaded his little white truck with stuff. And so then we went over to Charlotte and Jason's house. But Mickey Adams and Charlotte Alexander and Jason Williams, they were the three people that helped us. Nobody else, and some of the Warren Street people, incidentally, like in pushing the car out and stuff like that, but none of the other people, including people that we knew that came down to just look at the water and just turned and walked away and didn't even offer to try to help. But those three people helped. Those three people were our salvation that day.
Were the other members of the community on Warren Street, were they going through the same experiences?
They were doing the best they could to save their things. Nobody was helping them either. They were just trying to
do the best. So it was sort of like a sinking ship. Everyone fend for themselves and save what you can in your life, especially.
Exactly.
Was there a time when you thought your life was in danger?
Well, that last time I came off the porch, the thought did cross my mind that I could drown there, but I am a fairly decent swimmer. I'm not a strong swimmer, but I can keep my head above water, and the water was going in the direction that I was going in. So
you could body surf your way there?
If I had to, I could let go of the books and save myself, but I was determined not to let go of the books unless it was really a life or death thing. So we stayed there with Charlotte and Jason for 2 weeks, and of course we went down a couple times to look at the water, and the water, of course, was up to the rafters in that part of Warren Street. The water was up to the edge of the roof, and all you could see of the houses were the roofs of that part of Warren, from that part, our part of Warren Street on down to the end. All you could see were the roofs.
I found that hard to imagine in my mind's eye. What did you think when you saw that? When you saw your home underwater, it was sort of like an Atlantean experience, isn't it? How did you feel about that?
I was just sure we'd lost everything. And I was thankful for the things we'd saved. I was pleasantly surprised going through things to discover how much we had saved. Charlotte Alexander had saved a bunch of our pictures. She's really into pictures. So she'd gone around and pulled the pictures off the wall. So she saved about six of our good pictures off the wall. And she also was able to find a bookcase for the books I'd saved. So with Jason's help, Jason Williams' able help. So, and I was pleasantly surprised with how much we had saved. I couldn't even bear to think about the things we'd lost, but I started looking at clothes, and I discovered I had underwear, I had socks, I had shirts, all these things that Charlotte had grabbed out of the bureau drawer. Lee had summer dresses. Unfortunately, we lost all of our winter clothes. I guess we lost 100% of our winter clothes because all the winter clothes were further back in the closets, and being warm weather and summer clothes were to the front, that's what Charlotte and also Lee were grabbing out of the closets. So we lost the winter, all of our winter clothes and all of our more formal clothes we lost. But summer clothes, you know, we ended up with surprisingly good wardrobe, you know. So we were just thankful for what we had saved. I figured everything in the house was gone. Then I started thinking about there were some things in the house that, unless they floated away, which was unlikely, because we'd closed the door. When I went out, I closed the door, because I didn't want any more stuff to float out than absolutely necessary. And I got to thinking there were some things that unless somebody stole them when the water went down, or in the unlikely event that they washed away or the whole house went down the river, they should still be there. Like I had Tibetan butter lamps made out of solid brass. I had solid brass incense burners. There was a lot of, there were like ceramic and glass things in the house. So I began thinking some of those things would be savable, as indeed a lot of them were. A lot of them were. But it was, so we lived, we stayed there at Charlotte and Jason's home for two weeks. And during that time, that's the time when the electricity went out for about 24 hours. They kept saying that we have no water, we're going to lose water, we're going to lose electricity. As it was, I think we only lost water for a day or two. We only lost electricity for 24 hours. So that was bearable. Even though the temperature was high, it was hot and humid, it was bearable. And Harris Teeter, bless their hearts, they stayed open the whole time.
Here in Greenville, was it possible to move about the city without...
Once you got away from the water, once you got away from the edge of the water...
What was the periphery of the worst flooded area? I mean, it was 28 feet.
It was the whole area north of First Street was underwater, the downtown north of First Street, the town commons, and over our way, North Elm Street, North Oak Street, Warren Street, all that was underwater. So, but once you got away from that, you know, we'd get two blocks away, it was like nothing had ever happened. And you could just freely drive around Greenville once you got away from the flooded area. Now, of course, on the other side of the river, over by the airport and all that area, that was all underwater. It was
right, terrible. We were told we couldn't come in here at all from the Washington area.
Exactly. But in the higher parts of Greenville, like when you get go up Charles Street, go towards the plaza, all that was